For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Today it is Positive Friday. It is the weekend preview show back after the bye week for PLL games on the slate in Minnesota. We're going to take a quick second here, talk through every matchup, some of the roster movement, and the things that we can be looking for in each of those games. So I guess welcome back to Sticks In. My name is Dan Arestia. I am glad you're here. It's going to be a quick one today. I am on the road right now playing an away game, away podcasting game. We'll see how these recordings and everything turn out. Hopefully it sounds really good for you. If it doesn't sound as good as normal, it's because I'm not where I normally am. But PLL back this week after the league bye week. Neutral site, all eight teams will have a game. Nobody plays a doubleheader. They are playing in Minneapolis in Minnesota. It is also Indigenous Heritage Weekend. And I'm a fan of that every year they do that. I think the PLL does a pretty decent job of trying to make that part of the season every year and bring some awareness to just how much, you know, the sport that we all love is the sport of the Native American people. So I thought the jerseys they made for the weekend were awesome, top to bottom. I thought all eight of them were incredible. I thought the Water Dogs and the Atlas in particular had outstanding uniforms. If I was an Atlas fan, I would be pounding the table and saying, make this our jersey every week. I think, you know, I made no like secret of it when the new jerseys came out that I did not necessarily love the new Atlas or Water Dogs logos. I think the Indigenous logos and the designs that were done for them were good enough that they should just be there every week. I think they're really, really awesome. I thought the cannons with the kind of like the fire was very cool. I thought the whips ended up with a very awesome uniform. You really couldn't go wrong. All eight of them were incredible. Did pick one up myself. Had to. Just couldn't pass it up. So Indigenous Heritage Weekend in Minnesota. Again, all eight teams. Nobody has the bye. No double headers. So everybody's in action this week. Coming off the bye of the league last week. It's an interesting week if you're a Chaos fan, because there's the bye last week, and then you play this week, and then their bye, I believe, is next week, and then it's like All-Star week, and then regular season again. So they'll play one game in about a month's time as a team, and that's kind of challenging. So Chaos is kind of in a weird spot, and it's like a scheduling quirk I kind of noticed. To the games themselves, again, we're going to keep things quick today. To the games themselves, first game, New York Atlas, Maryland Whipsnakes. That game is, as you're listening to this tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern. You can watch it on ESPN+. New York is a 2.5 goal favorite for the second straight game. I guess a couple of notes about movement. Jake Stevens, Peyton Cormier, are both in for New York. They are done with the visa stuff, so they can travel, they can play, they can compete. They will play for New York this week. How they kind of fit in and the way they get deployed, I think, will be interesting. There's no way you can disrupt the Atlas attack right now. I think you have to keep running that thing as it is. If you wanted to really get crazy, I'm assuming Eric Law is still hurt, but if you wanted to really get crazy and move Schellenberger to X and Cormier to, I guess, like the righty side, or so, I don't know how you would do it, but how those guys get deployed, I think, is going to be something that's fun to watch. Atlas have Baptiste in the lineup, which is nice to see. No concerns for him. He did take that hit to the head in Philly that ruled him out for part of the game, but it felt kind of precautionary because it was a game that they kind of had in hand, but it looks like he's not even on the injury report or anything, so no issues there. A couple of things that I guess I'm looking forward to seeing in this is I think the matchups of the Atlas defense and the Maryland attack. Do you put Gavin Adler on TJ Malone? Is that where you start him? He's matched up pretty well with Zed Williams in the past, or, you know, I've kind of liked it. You know, they always kind of just run those picks into him. That's just brutal. But, it's been a matchup where he's done pretty well in terms of limiting Zed on his own in the past. He still can kind of, you know, draw slides, but, it wasn't ever situations where I felt like I was watching Zed like cook Gavin Adler for a goal. I thought last week, the Rex Road matchup on Ryder Garnsey was pretty tough. And so I don't know if that's something where they want to, you know, I think Rex Road probably plays better against Rambo, and that's probably a better matchup for him. So if you go Rex Road on Rambo, where do you put Gavin Adler? Where do you put Brett Makar? I think where they put Adler will be interesting because it'll either show a rookie in TJ Malone a ton of respect. He gets Gavin Adler. Or they, again, trust Gavin Adler to try and take away the Zed Williams matchup. Next thing I'm excited to see, Levi Anderson's pro debut on the Whips, hilariously. Not on the Redwoods, who drafted him, but on the Whips. You know, after the Philly games, I did ask, you know, Staggs a little bit about acquiring Levi Anderson and all that. And, you know, he said, look, he became available, was the way he kind of described it. And they jumped at it. Said he's a guy who can draw a slide. He's a matchup problem for them. He can win from the midfield. He can pass very, very well. You know, he plays head up with help coming very well. It's what he did at St. Joe's so well. And obviously he can score on his own if help doesn't come. So, you know, Dordovic's still not back for them. I think Anderson is a guy who is going to be a key. It's crazy to say it. A rookie in his pro debut is going to be critically important, but I really think he could be for the Whips. I think getting more out of their midfield depends on getting guys like what Anderson can do into their lineup. Guys who can draw slides and take dodging pressure off of their attack. It's been this thing the Whipsnakes have been after basically for years, but they can never just get everybody healthy. You know, last year, I don't think they had Smith, Dordovic, Zed, and Rambo in a lineup together until, like, you know, the back quarter of the season. Like, they were just never together. And Smith was never really fully healthy last season anyway. So, you know, they've been hunting for this midfielder who can take the dodging pressure and really take it off. Really, you need two of them so that one of them can eat a pole and the other one can be that guy. But Anderson, I think, needs to be doing that day one. I think he's going to, you know, have to be in for them. Whips are coming off the OT win. I think that can kind of turn their tide a little bit after the tough start. You know, getting that first win under your belt and getting that feeling back for the 2024 season, I think goes a long way for these guys. I think Atlas are officially, you know, it's no surprise here. They're the team to beat right now. They're going to get everybody's best shots. I think the Whips getting matchup wins in the midfield will be critical for the success here. I think the last thing in this game I'm excited to see, Zapatello and Schellenberger. I'm assuming that's going to be the matchup. Ajax has done very well with that matchup in the past. He's really held Schellenberger in check. You know, Connor's always going to get, you're not holding him to zeros. But Ajax has done as good of a job as anybody did on him for his entire college career. So the Zapatello and Schellenberger, the first pro chapter of that matchup, I think is going to be fun. Second game on Friday night. This is a not quite Lax After Dark. I don't know, 9:30 p.m. Eastern. It'll be played during Lax After Dark. The Boston Cannons and the Utah Archers. This is also on ESPN+. Utah is a 1.5-goal favorite here at plus money. Boston defense has been really good after, you know, they had a bad showing week one. There's no other way to slice it. They kind of got pushed around. But since then, they've been very, very good. I want to know, are they going to try and play that street fight kind of game that Boston just kind of tends to play now? Because going to the penalty box repeatedly against a team like Utah is you're playing a dangerous game if you're doing that. I think a key here is that Hasek is back. Back from holdout, paternity, whatever. He's back just in time. Defense needs an anchor, and it needs someone who's going to guard Asher Nolting successfully on his own. They get both of those in the cyborg in Graham Hasek, so I think his return is extremely timely. It really lets the Archers do more, you know, more of what they want to do with their matchups. They can kind of put their guys where they want rather than it feels like they're kind of playing catch up if they go, you know, if they're stuck with Jeffrey on Nolting or something like that. So I think a question for this one is who are the Cannons going to pull? The Chaos kind of tried this semi-shutoff look with O'Keefe with a shorty, you know, to different degrees of success. Other teams have done kind of similar schemes to that, but if it routinely ends with Ament getting a short stick, he's been cooking the short stick all season. He's been looking for that all season, and the Archers just keep saying thank you for it. I know with their personnel, there's more guys that need a pull than poles you have. But I think it's a big day for, it's got to be a big day, even, you know, for a guy like Goodrich, who's awesome, staying with Amen is still very hard. I think Amen has been really, really, you know, he's not under the radar because he's Grant Amen, but man, is he important to that Archers offense right now. I think something else here is the faceoff spot, hilariously, in a game with the Boston Cannons, but I mean, nobody's calling him for his demise yet, but Mike Sisselberger has been under 50% in back-to-back games. Tucci is coming in very confident off of that game. I know it was against, you know, a Water Dogs team with no specialist, but this could, to me, be like a career kind of game for Tucci. Like, if he does really well in this one, if he keeps Sis under 50, if he gets the better of Mike Sisselberger in this game, he will be the guy who went to pro lacrosse purgatory, face-off purgatory, a year ago, and played his way back into a 19-man regular roster spot. He will be the only guy who managed to do it. So if he can do that, if he can really be successful against Sisselberger, what a story Zach Tucci is shaping up to be this year. To say nothing, obviously, of how important the possessions are themselves. Sisselberger is so key to the Archers because they're so good in the 32, because they can play so quickly, that if he's under, you know, 50% and they don't get those quick opportunities, it's tougher for them. I think you've kind of seen that the last 2 weeks. I think Brett Dobson is obviously going to be a key for them again. He was very good against Boston last year. You know, the Cannons are a very good shooting team, but Dobson played, I think he had like, he might have been at 60% against them last year. And then the last thing, I think I saw that Pat Cavanaugh is not in the lineup this week. I think he's got an injury. I'm sure he's coming off the college season banged up. So Cannons need a dodging threat to do some more work for them from midfield. Where they get that from, we'll see. Saturday, first game, 6 p.m. Eastern, California Redwoods and Denver Outlaws. This is the lone game of the weekend that's on linear. You can watch it on ESPN2 or ESPN Plus if you just like to stream everything. Denver is a 1.5 goal favorite at plus money. We finally get the Brennan O'Neill encore. We've been waiting for this one. Last time we saw him, it feels like it was a month ago, but oh my goodness, set the world on fire, and then we didn't see him for 2 weeks. Just like the brutal scheduling quirk for us as fans, for the league trying to get this kid on TV as much as they can, especially after that performance. It's all we could talk about for a week. I think that's going to be exciting. I think something you hate to see it, but Wisnowskis is on the pup list, and I really, it sucks because he's a guy who was so good for them in year one and then was kind of, you know, in a tough spot year two as that offense just couldn't get things moving. You know, here we are in his year three, and it looks like things are turning around for them, and, you know, he's not able to be on the field. So you hope whatever, you know, that he can get back out there soon. But for Denver, I think obviously I'm really excited to see O'Neill again. I think he'll probably have a decent matchup. I think there's a fun part of this in that I know Chris Fake is on the injury report. I did not see if he is ruled out or not. Look, folks, I'm on vacation. I haven't looked that closely. But, you know, if Chris Fake is in the lineup and a full go, he has done well with a Brennan O'Neill matchup before. We saw it in college. He's handled that matchup pretty well. At the pro level, obviously, it's a little bit different because of the way the rest of the offense and the rest of the defense have to play. It's never as simple as just a one-on-one thing, and that's just how it's going to go. But Chris Fake coming into that matchup, if he's healthy and being confident, would make that a fun story for sure, if he can keep that up. If you have the guy who is somehow the guy who could guard Brennan O'Neill, then you get some pretty nice luxury to have on your roster. I'm very excited to see Graham Bundy perform again in this game. And again, when we last saw Denver, it was we all came away talking about the marvel that is Brennan O'Neill, and rightfully so. He was the hero of that game and did things that, as Coach Sudan said after the game, he had never seen before. But I think Bundy hit like four posts in that game. He was stepping the shots from 2-point range that looked like he was in like a layup line, like it wasn't hard for him. And then he scores his first goal in that around the world. Like Graham Bundy is gonna be special, folks. I'm telling you, like, O'Neill is going to keep taking headlines, and then Bundy's going to be that guy who just keeps showing up and making people say, oh man, I bought a ticket to see Brennan O'Neill, but I'm happy I got to see this. Like, I'm telling you, he's going to be good. He's really going to be good. So I'm excited to see his kind of on-court performance in this game. You know, you start looking at matchups. I don't think he's going to be a guy who gets a pole. And if he does get a pole, it might be a matchup that he feels okay about. You know, can he take it to Jared Connors? I don't know. But, you know, ends up with a shorty against the Redwood shorties. I feel pretty good about Graham Bundy right off the bat. So I'm excited to see him perform particularly. I know, look, I'm going to be turning on the TV looking for where Brennan is and watching Brennan like a hawk every possession because it's, you know, you've reached the point where you know you're going to be watching a special career here. But Bundy's going to be appointment viewing for me too, for sure. For the Redwoods, I think there's a, you know, there's a key to them for possession with T.D. Erland facing off. He got the better of Trevor Baptiste last week. Their wings, I think, are excellent. They might have the best wing play in the league, the Redwoods do. They're going to play with a full 19 guys this time, assuming somebody doesn't get hurt in the first couple minutes again. So, you know, I think that kind of thing matters. For them on offense, you want to see, I guess the thing you never want to see if you're a Redwoods fan is like that quick four-goal run from the other team. Like that run that puts you down 5-1 in the first quarter or something like that. Because, you know, I kind of said it after the Philly weekend, but like they just have this hard time getting away from playing this hero ball. I'm going to be the guy who gets the goal that starts us off again. You know, everybody on their offense has been guilty of it, I think, at some point. But they really do sometimes struggle to just not get into that kind of mode. And so you don't want to see them deal with this, like, you know, if Brandon O'Neill scores two or three quick ones right out of the gate and the other team, you know, the Redwoods are just trying to answer, they're all just trying to be the guy who's got the counterpunch, they're all playing 1v6, can't win that way, just can't. So you don't want to see that kind of thing happen for them. I think, you know, you want to see kind of their attack win their matchups against this Denver defense that, you know, maybe you're starting to think is showing some age a little bit. I think Garnsey can be successful in his matchup for sure. I think he's, you know, again, he's maybe the most downright creative player in terms of just like making a shot from seemingly nothing in the PLL. So, you know, he can be a guy that does those kind of things, but I think you still want to see their midfield produce too. You know, you want to see guys like Degnan continue to be successful shooting the ball. The Chrome, you know, Sean Scannone, it looks like is still on the injury report. So, you know, you want to see shooters like the Chromes, or I keep calling them the Chrome. You want to see shooters like the Redwoods be successful against a goalie who you would assume is a backup. But all in all, I think you want to see possession led by T.D. Erland winning faceoffs mitigate any kind of runs that happen. You don't want to see the Outlaws go make it take it with Wehrman. I know Wehrman was great against Sisselberger. If he does it against Sisselberger and then he does it again against T.D. Erland, then start making those Denver championship bets. You'll get tremendous value. You want to see T.D. control the pace of the game for them and not let Denver go on those big runs or those runs that can kind of just sink the Redwood psyche a little bit. So, look, after the Philly game, Coach Nat invoked my UConn basketball coach, Danny Hurley, and said, you better get us now. And Redwoods are very much a team that's kind of figuring it out in that you better get us now kind of mode if you really like this roster. So, and it seems like Coach Nat does. He really likes this group. And if they figure it out and they're dangerous, then, I mean, obviously that'll be fun for a Western Conference that's looking, you know, pretty intriguing all of a sudden. Like, Denver is not an afterthought. Carolina is really good. Utah is really good and the defending champ. And California is just kind of lurking, a team that's going to put it together sooner or later. So California, you want to see them take that step. I think, again, possession for them is key, led by TD being successful against Luke Wehrman. And for Denver, you want to see them build on what they just did. More Brennan, more Graham Bundy, more of these guys kind of taking over. You want to see maybe a big Jake Pisano game somewhere if he can step into a two and hit one and be like, here's our young core, come and get us. I think that would be a ton of fun. Last game of the weekend, 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, the Philadelphia Water Dogs and the Carolina Chaos. You can watch this one on ESPN+. Plus. Philly is a 1.5 goal favorite at, yeah, you guessed it, plus money. obviously the talk of the dogs right now is that they added Stathicus. So we're back to the face-off talk. I guess I'll just spend a minute on this because I wrote about it and it was all anybody could talk about. And I even asked Sauer, if you didn't listen yet, the interview with Michael Sauer from earlier this week, I thought was awesome. I did very much appreciate him coming on and we had a really good discussion about, you know, coaches and playing and water dogs and all that good stuff. But I know that the water dogs are 0-3 and I know they haven't dressed a face-off guy yet. And I know it's really, really easy to just be like, well, they haven't won and they don't have a face-off guy. So it must be that they're losing because they don't have a face-off guy. It's never that simple. It just never is, especially in the PLL. It's never that easy. There's never just one little thing you fix and all of a sudden you're great. You're 3-0 and not 0-3. It really isn't that easy. I think, you know, look, it's the funny thing about the dogs not dressing a face-off guy is they were actually really good in the 32 when they did win face-offs. I think they had six, you know, they've won 8 face-offs this year out of whatever, 80, I think. I think they're like 8-72. Of those 8 face-offs, I think they've scored a goal in the 32 on half of them. And they forced saves on, I think, 2 or 3 of them. Some of them very good saves from Brett Dobson, from Colin Kirst. So, like, it, hilariously, when the dogs are in the 32, they're great in it. But they just never played for it. I think, you know, everybody likes to go to the whips thing because the Nardella had the perfect game. Yes, the whips go 31-31 on faceoffs. I will add that on the in the 32, after those 31 wins, they scored 3 goals. And, yeah. 3 goals and, you know, the dogs lost in overtime. Okay. The dogs, in the 52-second possession that followed the 32 in their first touch of the ball, scored 9 of their goals of the game immediately following a faceoff loss when the other team played poorly in the 32. So, like, the idea that I still don't firmly – you haven't convinced me yet that the faceoff is the key here. They haven't shot great. They're a Brett Dobson 23-save game. A Zach Tucci 40-yard 2-pointer and a Kieran McArdle miracle, not overtime winner, you know, Krebs miracle save from being 3-0. It's not like roster shakeup time. It's not like things are crazy here. You know, Sauer said it in the interview this week, but, you know, there's just too many vets on this team who are too even-keeled and keep the temperature where it needs to be like, you know, Tierney doesn't know what he's doing at the pro level and they need a face-off guy and this and that. It's never just the face-off guy. It's never that simple. It really isn't. No team has ever had a problem that I don't think so clearly obvious as it's this one thing that if you fix it, everything is right now. It just doesn't work that way in the PLL. I think Jack Hanna being back this week is going to be big because he can stretch a defense. He's a very, very good shooter. The Dogs are the only team in the league who have not hit a 2-pointer yet. They have attempted, I believe, the fewest in the league. Like, I had the fun with it when I wrote about it, but they've played 3 games. In one of them, in terms of just the number of times the ball went in the net, it was just as many as the opponent. And in the other 2, they put the ball in the net more times than their opponent did. But because of 2-pointers, they lost the games. You want to keep saying, oh, well, maybe they just aren't winning faceoffs, and that's why. I just don't see it that way. But, I think Hanna back can maybe make them a better shooting team, and that can be the difference. But, you know, we don't have to go down this face-off rabbit hole forever. On the chaos side of things, they're coming off a game where they had a pretty rough shooting day. I think they would tell you the same. I think they played against the Archers. I think they played well enough to win the game, but they did not shoot well enough to win the game. After the game, I think they were visibly... like in post-game media and looking at the guys and everything. And obviously you saw Rowlett snap his stick in half on his way off the field, but they were visibly frustrated and pissed with the results of that game. That felt like a win that they let get away. And that can be a powerful motivator for people. I think matching up with the Chaos remains extremely difficult because they're so fast, because they're so interchangeable. There's so much lateral speed there. And I think you're going to need, you know... The Dogs, one of their strengths is their depth at short stick D midfield with guy, you know, they'll have Scarpello and Richard And, you know, those guys can cover very, very well. They'll be the key to this game for me. Can they match up with Knobloch or, you know, if it's, I believe Eric Dobson's going to be in again. So Knobloch, Dobson, Minicus, like, you know, I keep throwing him in there because people seem to forget he exists. But Kyle Jackson is a very shifty, very speedy, you know, water bug kind of dodger. It's nothing but that guy's all over the field for the chaos. And then Josh Byrne's going to eat your top pole and probably beat him. So I think the defensive midfield for the Water Dogs is a key spot in this game. If you see them routinely getting beaten by Knobloch, by Minicus, whoever else, if it's Ross Scott coming out of the midfield and Minicus at attack, which it could just as easily be, sure, like, that's going to make for a rough day for the Dogs, I think. Otherwise, I think we get a good one. I don't know how well Stathicus is going to do against Nick Rowlett. It's probably a good first matchup for him. You know, this isn't to disparage Nick Rowlett, but he's not Trevor Baptiste. He's not, you know, Sisselberger. He's not, you know, one of those kind of guys where you don't have to come in and, as a rookie, cut your teeth on the best of the, you know, the all-pro face-off award-winning kind of guys. So, you know, he gets Nick Rowlett, which is not an easy matchup at all because Nick Rowlett's going to grind you out, and he got the better of Sisselberger last week. He's not easy, but he's not Trevor Baptiste. So you don't have to come in against Trevor Baptiste. That's kind of what I'm getting at here. You know, we'll kind of see what Stathicus can do there. I've had people tell me that they don't think Stathicus is necessarily going to be a great pro and that there are other guys who might have been a better fit. But, you know, Tierney knows his guys. And, you know, obviously having that connection is helpful in evaluating face-off talent and everything. He knows Stathicus, I'm sure, better than anybody. We'll see what he can do. I liked Stathicus coming out of school because of his physical gifts and, you know, in a rule set that I thought would have poles facing off. Now that they're not there anymore and it's easier to exit, you don't need Stathicus' physicality quite as much. But, look, you know, if he, I'm sure if he goes 50% and the Water Dogs win in overtime and they score twice in the 32, everyone's going to say, look, it was the face-off the whole time. Sure. The really funny outcome is going to be if he goes like 70% and the Water Dogs lose. Maybe it wasn't the face-off the whole time. But that probably wouldn't happen, right? I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to tune in for that one just so I can, I'm sure, have people telling me how wrong I was, or I can take a victory lap, or both. I don't know. Somehow both. But that is going to do it for the Friday show. I told you it was going to be a quick one. I do not have a ton of time because I am nowhere near my own home. I am on a beach enjoying the views and a cocktail or two. Hope you have a nice, positive Friday. Hope you enjoy the games. We'll be back to regularly scheduled programming next week. We'll have an interview again, and we'll have a regular length Friday preview show next week. Thank you again for sticking around with me, folks. We'll see you next time.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.